You're listening to Road to Black Tech Week, where culture, capital, and creativity collide. And today, we're talking about storytelling, the kind that moves people, builds brands, and sparks change. We brought together a powerhouse panel, Vanessa Massoon from Lightship Foundation, Otavio Samuels of Revolt, Josh Ott from The Shade Room, and moderator Jefferson Noel of Barbershop Speaks. They break down how to share your truth without losing your voice, why vulnerability is a strength, and what it takes to turn your lived experience into your loudest asset. It's real, it's hilarious, and it's packed with gems, whether you're building a company, growing a media platform, or just trying to be more you. Black Tech Week 2025 is going down July 14th through the 16th in Cincinnati. Hit blacktechweek.com and get in the room. Let's go.
How are you feeling today? How are you feeling today? I am excited for this discussion because we are speaking about the power of effective storytelling. The power of what? Of effective storytelling. In 2004, Barack Obama gave a speech that people called the speech that made him president. And when he started that speech, he started with a story. Oprah Winfrey, they told her that she was unfit for television. But she became one of the biggest household names because she's able to tell a story. Eric Thomas, one of the greatest public speakers of our time, always tells the story of how he was homeless and he would eat out of trash cans. And he's the biggest motivational speaker in the world because he can tell a story. So I want you to say, my story matters. I don't think they said it strong enough. I want you to say, my story matters. Say, my story matters. From beginning to end, my story matters. Every up and every down, my story matters. Give yourselves a round of applause. We have a spectacular panel with us. All right, we're about to have a good time speaking about the power of effective storytelling. I'd love to bring to the stage first, Vanessa Massoon. She is the Director of Communications at Lightship Foundation. Give her a robust round of applause. Woo. Up next, we have Otavio, CEO of Revolt. Give him a round of applause. He came back. And lastly, we have Josh Ott, the head of revenue at The Shade Room. All right. Okay, how are you all feeling today?
Lovely, beautiful, beautiful black people in the room. What's cracking?
Yes.
Yes, good. So before we jump in, if you all can just share a little bit more about who you are. And like I said in the back, keep it to less than an IG reel. Right, before we get into the meat and potatoes.
My name is Vanessa Massoon. I direct communications and media for Lightship Foundation and Black Tech Week. I also write thought leadership around the importance of inclusion of black people in technology and entrepreneurship in terms of investment.
Bueno.
Yay. Otavio Samuels, I have the privilege and the honor of being the CEO of Revolt, which was founded by the legendary Sean Diddy Combs back in 2013. We're celebrating 10 years of doing what we do. Also, I'm a child of God, a change agent trying to leave my dent on the world before I leave.
And I am Josh Ott. I'm the head of revenue and marketing at The Shade Room. I've spent my career telling brand stories at 8 different major media companies, conglomerates. I believe very strongly that black voices need to be heard, and I believe that there's also a business behind those black voices. We need to start sustaining them. And so I'm passionate about building black businesses, making sure they have a future, and feel very blessed to be here talking to you guys.
Awesome. May you please give our panel a round of applause. Okay, so I have a question. It's a general question. I'm going to throw the alley hoop. Whoever jumps and dunk it, that's up to you, all right? So let's start with, why are stories so effective when reaching an audience?
Not you wanna go?
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
I can tell a long story. Do you want me to tell the long story?
I'll tell a short story.
Okay, deal.
I feel like stories are important because stories evoke emotion, right? Good stories, good stories, bad stories, they all make you feel something. That is the short answer, right? You're selling something every time, whether you're selling a product or a feeling, it's all a feeling, right? So if I'm writing about why it's important that Black funders get venture capital dollars beyond 1%, you are meant to feel enraged by the story I'm telling, right? To the point where change starts to happen. So emotion, that's my answer.
I love that.
I'm a ladder on that. Margaret Atwood, the creator of Handmaid's Tale, has a quote, and she says that humans are made to tell stories and see themselves in those stories. And I believe that is the critical part that Vanessa is talking about here, because when you see yourself in a story, you're emotionally connected to it. There's a science behind what Vanessa just said. So when you're watching a horror flick, when you're watching something that makes you anxious, you're sitting up at the front of your seat, you're leaning back, you're like scared. All of those are physical reactions to stories, right? You wouldn't have that reaction if you weren't emotionally connected to the story.
I love that.
Okay, I'm probably gonna do a little bit of a walk on this one. Okay, so stories matter because they help us understand the world without being in that situation. So if you go back to like the beginning of time with cavemen, you had to tell a story. Hey, son, don't go outside when it's 10 o'clock at night because you might get eaten by a dinosaur. The son doesn't need to go out and get eaten by a dinosaur. The story helps him understand what the world looks like without him experiencing it for himself. Now my pivot. The problem that we have as Black people is that the stories that have been told about us are the same stories, and they've been told for like 600 years. I might have done this walk when I was here last time, but there's a Gomez de Zurara, who was the chief chronicle officer for Prince Henry of Portugal back in the 15th century. He was responsible for chronicling all of his war wins or war crimes, whatever you want to call them. What makes him special and unique to the people in this room is he's the first person to tell a story that made putting Black people in slavery Christian work, missionary work. He was the first one to say, Black people are savages, therefore you must go civilize them. Black people are third class citizens, therefore it is God's work to take them out of the element that they're in. That story that was written in the late 1400s is still the same story that plagues Black people today. Media is simply the industry of ideas. We are still dealing with an idea that is 600 years old that the world believes about us. That is the power of effective storytelling. And we have to believe that the storytelling is the reason that we get into this mess, right? Because once he writes that book, then everybody in Europe consumes it, which then sends them all to Africa to then colonialize it, right? We have to believe that if storytelling got us into this mess, then storytelling is gonna play a critical role in getting us out of this mess.
Yeah, that's good. So that story essentially led to 600 years of a generational curse. 100%. And now it's on us to tell a new story 100%. So we can have 600 or 6,000 years of generational blessings.
Amen.
All right, I love it. So before we get too deep and we start speaking about business, I want to make it a little personal first, because before we talk business, we have to realize that we're all humans first, right? Or am I the only human here?
Nah, we
all humans. All right. So, and this is a personal question. Have you ever been ashamed of your story? And if yes, when did you learn to embrace your story, even the most embarrassing parts?
For me, it ties to race. My mother is actually from Korea, And I know that, like, you know, we're all Apple, everybody's everybody now, but I was born in the 70s and I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And I got made fun of relentlessly for having a mother that was Korean. The nail shop jokes, it was brutal, okay? So I stopped telling people that my mom was Korean. They would ask, and I wouldn't say. And the moment or the time that I stopped being ashamed of that, which I'm low-key, like, embarrassed about now to say, but I shouldn't be because it does tie in, is like the late 90s when girls who looked like me started showing up in rap videos. I was like, well, okay. And, you know, when it became socially acceptable to be mixed race and people weren't making fun anymore, and that really does speak to the power of storytelling, because storytelling is not just written word, right? It's music, it's videos, it's imagery. So those images of girls who looked like me, you know, I'm a different kind of black, and they looked like me, so it wasn't embarrassing for me anymore. And that was the moment, like, that I wasn't embarrassed to have a Korean mother anymore. And now I embrace it, and I love it, and I embrace the culture, and I learn about it as much as I can over the last 20 years or so, and yeah. So that was me being vulnerable with y'all today.
That's clean, that's clean.
Yeah, I'll go real quick. Similar. I'm biracial. So my embarrassment came from not having a tribe when I was younger, fighting black kids, fighting white kids, fighting Asian kids. Like, there was never a group that I was fully aligned with. I mean, sports was my vehicle to kind of transcend that, but I'm not going to lie to you and say that I'm fully resolved with that. So we're still working on today, showing up in our authentic self. I think that's a very human thing to do. And so, yeah, that's it.
I'm blessed in that I believe our greatest strengths give birth to our greatest weaknesses. And I love my strengths. Like, I love my gifts. And so for most of my life, I've always been saying, like, God, I'm so grateful that you made me to be exactly the way that you made me to be. I'll take all of these strengths and all of these weaknesses. During COVID, self-diagnosed, but I'm 100% sure I have it. I discovered I have, and this is the first time I think I've ever talked about it in person. I discovered I have what maybe people would call a condition called aphantasia. And so aphantasia means you don't have a visual mind's eye. So like when I close my eyes, everything is black. I don't have a visual memory. I don't have a visual imagination. I don't have any of that stuff, which is why when people come up to me and they're like, do you remember me? I'm like, actually I don't, because I don't have one picture in my brain. And when I learned about this condition, I absolutely felt like it was a deficit. I absolutely felt like for the first time in my life, I had identified a weakness that I wanted. So to your point, I think I'm still working through it. Part of it is even being willing to tell the story and have the conversation. But the way that I get there, back to our point on storytelling, is recognizing that, again, if our greatest strengths give birth to our greatest weaknesses, then our greatest weaknesses give birth to our greatest strengths. And so if I've identified the weakness, now all I have to do is find the strengths and the gifts that come off of that. And so in 2023, I am relentlessly focused on trying to figure out how my unique, specific brain works so that I can maximize it and optimize it so that I'm not telling my story about a deficit. I'm telling myself a story about my gift. And the last thing I'll say as I close out is, I think the most important story we will ever learn to tell is a story we tell ourselves about ourselves. And so in 2023, I am focused on the story that Daytavio is telling Daytavio so that Daytavio has his best shot at being great.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I want you all to notice something in all of their answers. And I could relate to a lot of what you all said. Growing up in Miami, I was born and raised in Miami, and my parents are Haitian. No Zos in the house? Yeah. All right, I love it. All right, sak passe. I usually get a louder roar, but there's not a lot of Haitians here in Cincinnati. I used to get bullied for being Haitian. And I also had a condition called eczema, and I was very, very embarrassed about it. And I noticed that all of us, when we spoke about something embarrassing about ourselves and when we began to embrace it, I noticed that all the things we were embarrassed about are things that we couldn't change, that are outside of our control. We didn't decide who would give birth to us. We didn't decide to be mixed, but people made us embarrassed about that, although it was out of our control. And I think that's very powerful. And so let's speak about vulnerability, because you all just shared something that was very deep to you, and I'm sure it related with a lot of people in the audience. So can you speak a little bit about the power of vulnerability when telling your story?
So in order for stories to connect, and someone else is going to say this and I'll go much deeper than I will on this point, it is all about like that emotional connection. And let's back out a story for me in order to do this. When I first started out as a leader, you know, I was blessed. I was a young leader, 26, 27, 28, 29. I'm VP, I'm president, I'm all of these things. And I'm saying to myself, I must show up in a way that is perfect in order to lead. To be 28 and get the 45-year-old guy to follow me, I must be perfect. And what I quickly learned is nobody wants to follow a perfect leader, because nobody believes there's anything such as a perfect leader. And that in order to build, leadership is about followership. In order to build followership, I had to get much better at showing my vulnerabilities, my weaknesses. Yes, I might be great at these pieces, but let me tell you, baby, I'm flawed as all get out over here. And it is being willing to acknowledge my failures and being willing to acknowledge my weaknesses where I think followership becomes easier. And so then I think the same thing translates to storytelling. Nobody wants to connect to a perfect story that they don't believe exists. They want to connect to something that is real, that speaks truth, that is authentic. And if you're being authentic, then you're going to have some vulnerability somewhere.
Yeah. That's perfect. You can't really better that. But I will say that we have a unique advantage, one being Black, because these are stories that people want to hear, the whole world wants to hear. Black culture influences national culture influences the global culture. But also because we have these, you know, big tech platforms that we can use to share on a daily basis what is going on in our lives. And if you're a brand, just kind of bringing this into my business. If you're a brand, you have the opportunity to tell people about your business, the struggles, the ups and the downs, the wins. And what that does is it brings audiences into your brand to feel a part of it. Remember, we talked about that. There's that connection, a physical response to an emotional story. And then they root for you, and they support you, and they love your brand. And I think that it's specific to this room. Tech has a big problem in that nobody trusts it right now. There's all types of data issues. This room is going to deal with trust. So the worst thing you could do, to DeTavio's point, is say that you are perfect, that you have it all figured out, you know, that your brand is doing awesome all the time. Nobody believes that.
I feel too, like a decade ago, business communications, I mean, as early as a decade ago, it was very staunch, right? Very, very corporate, very staunch. And I was, you know, just one of one Black people in large corporations in communications that was like, hey, like, why don't we just start speaking more casually? No one talks like this ever. And they were like, no, that is unprofessional. Then emojis came out. I'm like, dude, let's use emojis in the comms. Everyone uses them in the text. Like, why don't we do it? And I'm going to tell you what, Brian Brackeen, co-owner of this conference, when I worked with him in Miami, he let everyone know, this is what we're going to do. And we did it, and everyone loved it. And now you look at business communications, it's so casual. Why? Tie in. People like authenticity. This is how we speak every day. Why are we on documents like and here for and here to, and unless they're technically legal, right? Like, why are we talking like that? So here we are. Everyone has embraced that level of authenticity. So now we just need to take it a step further.
And let's be honest, legal documents are silly too. They don't need to be talking like that either.
They really don't. the Constitution and all that.
Oh God, I love it. So Vanessa, and now we're going to zoom out a personal, we're going to zoom in a little to business. Still a little personal, but you know, there's a lot of overlap in that. You wrote on LinkedIn 8 months ago.
Stalker.
I did. You wrote, can we normalize not having a passion for something in order to be excellent? You know how people say, if I want to be excellent, I got to be passionate about it. And so some people might say, I'm not passionate about speaking. I'm not passionate about writing. I'm passionate about my product. I'm passionate about my business. So what do you say to that person who's not passionate about storytelling?
I wrote that because I get so sick of hearing that fucking word, passion. My passion. What's your passion? My passion is like kicking it with my kids, like at the pool and like watching TV. And, you know, those are my passions. I like to eat good food. My passion is not sitting here in front of y'all. I love y'all. Thank you for coming out, okay? But I'm sitting here because I'm a good writer. I'm sitting here because in college, a professor nominated me for the Honor Society and said, you are a fantastic writer and you might be able to pursue a career in it. And to that point, I was like, really? Okay. So I found a skill I was really good at and I've monetized it, and that's it. I am not passionate about writing. And you don't have to be passionate about anything to be really good at it, but you can monetize it. That's why I wrote that. And you know what? I work in communications, and most people who own startups, and I work with startups a lot, right? On branding, messaging. Most startup founders are not writers. They're not communicators. You're not communicators. But there's no reason you can't be. If you're passionate about what it is you're doing, the authenticity, see, it's all like tying and, you know, like connecting the dots. Bring that authenticity, bring your passion, what you're passionate about, to your writing, and it will resonate with people. And then, you know, just use apps to proofread and check your grammar, and that's it. And that's all I got.
I ain't gonna lie to you, I agree with you 100%, because I've written multiple books and I don't even like writing. Like, not at all.
Yeah, I don't like reading very much either, frankly.
Well,
but
I didn't say all that,
though. I do a ton of it.
In the world, there's a difference between your knowledge set, your skill set, and your passions, right?
That's
and
true.
People have to learn to tease those three things apart. You might be skilled, mm-hmm. you might be knowledgeable, but you may not be passionate at it. Doesn't mean you can't be great at it.
Mm-hmm. So let's do a quick temperature check. This is good so far? Is this good so far? Good. So I have a question for Josh. What's important when communicating your message on media platforms?
I think, well, we've already touched on, I don't have to say it again, but relatability, authenticity, building trust. Like, we all know that that's the gist of the day. Show up as yourself or your brand in the full, you know, problematic way. But I'm going to switch the question a little bit, because I think that there's an opportunity here. Social media has been the great democratizer. It has allowed businesses to transcend their pockets. It has allowed businesses to touch people outside of their demographic and their social circles. Yeah. And so I'd say what's important is utilizing these platforms for what they're good at, which is touching a lot of people in really quick time. And it's no secret that the Shade Room was built by Angelica Nwandu, my CEO. She's a genius, but she built it herself. She did it by herself. She didn't have an idea that she was going to create the largest and most impactful social media brand to date. She just shared something she loved, and that exploded into the Shade Room because social is built for it, and she happened to align timing with her genius. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for our brands to not use social as an afterthought, but lead with it. Don't bolt it on, build it in. Content and the storytelling that you put out on social on a daily basis, you know, in stories with all your blemishes, it'll help your business grow.
Yeah, I agree. And so I want to tie this in for Deitavio. We spoke a lot about being authentic, and I love how he said, post every day, use social media, don't use it as an add-on, make it be the vehicle. I really like the idea. Now, Deitavio, I'm sure you get a lot of pitches all the time, and you get a lot of people speaking about their business or they want their story on Revolt. You get a lot of that, I'm sure. And so if you could educate us on how do you determine, and this is kind of a weird question, but how do you determine if someone is being authentic or if their story is authentic?
Yeah. So I think I have to look at it on two different levels. One, which is the story authentic to the person? And that you only know from engaging with the person. And I can't tell somebody whether their truth is their truth or not. I can only have a conversation with you, understand your background, your perspective, who you are, and then judge how I see that show up in the story. But I think a big piece of why Black stories haven't been told is because the gatekeepers are continuously trying to tell us what is real and what is authentic for us, and they don't have that right or that power. And so that's not something I would ever do to another creator. My job, though, is then to see if your version of an authentic story can find an audience. Is it big enough to have audience? Is it big enough to get a million people to watch? And that's a different skill set. And, you know, I'll give an example. I remember back in the days I was working with maybe like a Fortune 50 brand, and they were getting ready to roll out this app. And they had this like great idea. It's one of those ideas that people come up with, no Black people in the room. They were like,
all the time.
We're going to launch this app. We're going to target it to Black people. We bought the rights to Meghan Trainor's song. It's all about that bass. And we're going to make it, it's all about that app, right? I'm like, this ain't going to work, right? Now, at the time, I happened to be at Urban One, which I was at a radio network. So we have 55 radio stations. So the first thing I do is call the programming leads over all of the radio and go, tell me how many times you have played Meghan Trainor's It's All About That Bass on the radio. Zero. Now I know I have someone who is trying to tell a story that is not authentic to my people and my culture. It is their version and their perception, or them trying to force what they like onto us, right? So I like creators to be authentic in whatever way they are authentic. My job is to challenge them to make sure that their truth shows up on the page. But then after that, my job is then to see, is your truth big enough to garner millions of eyeballs? And sometimes people have it and sometimes they don't.
Wow, can you give them a round of applause? Like these are great answers. So can you help us understand what are some big no-nos when telling your story, maybe to your customer base or your audience, or even pitching it to a media organization? Like, what are some like big fat no-nos?
Don't come up with an idea without Black people in the room.
Can you say it again for the people in the back?
Do not leave Black people out of the decision-making process.
That's good.
I don't have very many no-nos, but one of them I do have is trying to avoid too much like negative language, because communication does have the power to affect the way people feel. So unless I intend to make you upset or angry, I try not to use words like not and don't, and you know what I'm saying? That's like considered negative language. That's my only no-no, really. Everything else is like game on, cussing and carrying on and all of that.
My no-no might be for more like beginning storytellers, but the algorithms will lead us into places we don't want to be led. And so if you're just beginning your journey of storytelling, my no-no would be, don't go chasing the algorithm. Don't go chasing the likes. To the conversation that we had earlier, you may not be passionate about storytelling. Find your space, find your lane, find the stories that you can be passionate about and then go find the audience that is passionate about that, as opposed to creating for the algorithms, finding an audience that you don't even want. And now you're stuck telling stories over and over and over again that don't light your life on fire. Create for yourself, then find the intersection between what stories set me on fire and where's the audience that is going to be attached and fall in love with those stories.
That's clean. That's clean. Okay, and so what's some advice you'll give to help someone go from being, let's say, a below average storyteller to a compelling storyteller?
Yeah, write every day. Tell stories every day. Again, don't be caught up on the likes. Don't be caught up on this story got 5 likes, this story got 20 likes, this story got a, like, don't care about any of that stuff. Write every single day. The best way to write a movie is to inch your way there. Write every day for 365 days, you'll have a movie. I wrote a book maybe back in 2013. That book came because I wrote every single Sunday. I blogged. I watched what people responded to. I watched what people engaged with. I watched what they got excited about. I took all the things they liked and I put it in a book. Fastest way to write a book for me was to write every week. And so don't criticize yourself. Don't get stuck. Just do it every day. You'll find your way.
I say I agree. Just do it. Post it, write it, post it, and don't be obsessed with how many views it got. Because honestly, this can be a get recognized overnight game, or this can be a long game, okay? And it's been both for me. I wrote something in 2017 that, like, just a couple of years ago blew up and actually led to us getting a whole media partnership with, like, NBC Inc. magazine. Like, you really never know. Just write it and publish it. And it could come back around years later, because there's a time, a place, and a space for everything. And I know that we are all impatient. If we have something we want to launch, if we have something we want to get investment for, patience is key. And in storytelling, tell your story, post it. If it gets 2 views, write the next one, post that too. That may get 0 views. Guess what? The 13th one might get 50 views. And then people are going to go back and look at the stuff you wrote before. And then that's how that works. So yeah, just be patient, be real, and
That's clean.
Keep going, yeah.
That's good. And before Josh goes, we're going to take a few questions. So if you want to ask the panel a question, there's a microphone right there. Let's see who runs the fastest. There you go.
All right, My man ran.
No, that's right.
Yes. And we could take a couple more. We have a little bit of time. So Josh, please.
So 2 other things that I would add to that. I want to talk about 10,000 hours, and I want to talk about... What was the other thing I wanted to talk about? We'll start with 10,000 hours. So Malcolm Gladwell, right, has a book, Outliers, says you got to do 10,000 hours to be great at anything. So if that's just the math, that's just what it takes. If you want to be good at a craft, you have 10,000 hours to put in, and the only decision for you is how quickly you want to chase those 10,000 hours. Me, I'm the type of person who, like, I'm trying to get 10,000 hours done in 6 months. Like, I'm not sleeping. I'm doing it over and over and over and over again so that I can get to the point where I'm satisfied and happy with my work. So anyways, 10,000 hours, chase it as quickly as you want. And then the other one of my favorite books is a book called Steal Like an Artist by a guy named Austin Kleon. He's got a lot of great ideas in there, but one of them he talks about, so the idea, even just the idea of steal like an artist for me as a creative was freeing, this notion that you can steal from other people. We often think of it as imitation, but his whole point is it's not imitation if you build your own family tree. So you yourself identify, these are the 5 people doing work that I love that I want to do work like. These are the 10 people. That becomes your family tree. You study their work. You emulate their work. You copy their work. But when you pull it all in together, 5 different people through the voice of DeTavio, now you have something that is birthed completely different and completely fresh and completely new. And so don't get caught up on not wanting to steal or imitate. Find your family tree, build your family tree, and allow your voice to come through that.
Good.
That's the one right there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Google it. Yeah. Copy and paste it.
Yeah. And no more questions. I think we have enough. Go ahead. Oh, no, as in, yeah.
He was just saying, nobody else get in line. That was like, don't get in line.
This is good. This is good. All right.
There's also, you know, we grew up with very, like, all the stories grew up with, you know, the Giving Tree, the Gruffalo, you know, Three Little Pigs. They all are built upon repetition. So when you're talking about telling effective stories, I don't think it's too 101 or basic to say, use repetition. You know, marketing, people don't receive a message or change their perception until they see something seven times at minimum. And so use repetition in your storytelling, especially when it comes to social media these days where all media is so fragmented and, you know, you're getting information here and here and here and nobody's focused on anything. You gotta be really repetitive. So lean into that from a message, lean into that from a storytelling standpoint. One anecdotal, at the Shade Room, like we do a lot for small Black businesses. We created an e-commerce platform for them last year to just give them a bigger platform. And I will promote a Black business in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the night. And I will do that for 7 days straight. And you know what? There's never any negative sentiment around that post. We do have a lot of scale, but I firmly believe that it's because people don't mind receiving messages multiple times if it's a good message.
I like that.
That's true.
And to his point on repetition, the only lesson you need is Donald Trump. Like I'm a classically trained marketer, so I could easily do a deck that's like 20 pages, and this is what we're doing. And then I watch people like Donald Trump just get on, say, make America great again, build a wall, like super simplified, super repetitious, super clear on his audience. He don't give a dang about what y'all care or feel because he's not talking to y'all, right? And so like, I also just think that there are really incredible lessons that we can learn watching people like a Donald Trump tell their story in the marketplace.
That's true. And for all you founders, real quick, tagline and slogan, super important. Work on that, but that's a whole nother workshop. Maybe Black Tech Week 2024.
All right. Okay, so we're going to take questions. So these won't be the questions and the answers. It won't be long form like a Joe Rogan podcast. I want us to keep it to like a Vine. All right. Y'all remember Vine? 7 second videos. Okay. So we're gonna keep the questions to a Vine and answers to a Vine also. All right, we'll keep it short. My brother, talk to me.
All right, what up, though?
What up, though?
He said no corporate speak.
What up, though? That's what
I love free Black people. Exactly. I love free Black people.
I mean, I'm here to represent Detroit and also Haitians. You know, I'm half Haitian. So
that's right. That's right.
You gotta represent.
D-Town?
It's yep. 04.
Yeah. So I am an entrepreneur in progress, and I'm also a student. And I'm passionate about telling people my story. I've been an entrepreneur. I've gone through different things, cancer, trauma, PTSD, and I like the idea of telling a story, but I have a difficult time with being vulnerable because despite my passion for sharing a story, I have this image of myself in which I'm trying to hold myself to this certain standards and this level, and I'm trying to figure out how you guys were comfortable and got to the point where you're able to share your vulnerability and reach people because I started with it, you know. I went on a journey of self-improvement, and I told myself the only thing better than perfection is authenticity. But at the same time, it's still at the back of my mind. It's like, well, you got to be perfect. You got to have this image. And I'm just trying to figure out how you guys overcame that.
Have I?
Yeah. No, we haven't. We were in the back here.
I don't think that I have, actually.
We were in the back here
he praying pep-talked both of us
to Jesus before we came out here. All three of us. And all of us in the back praying for Jesus for the strength to get rid of the fear, to cast the fear and anxiety aside. Our stories are not coming. We're all a work in progress. Yes. Just keep doing it, leaning on the cross for that.
Can we give him a round of applause for being so courageous to ask that question? Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, I know 6 seconds is going to be a Vine. Which is the more you tell your story, the easier it is for you to see yourself on the stage and in the lights and think that the story is about you. And so at some point in time, you start to convince you, like, you were free before, so you were just talking the way that you talked. Now when people put you on a stage, now it's about you. And so the biggest thing that I would say to you is two things. Reframe the story. You don't have to be perfect. Nobody out here is looking for us to be perfect. In fact, we are all being very imperfect in this moment. Reframe the story. You don't have to be perfect to touch people. But two, be cautious that you are not being caught up about yourself. that moment of prayer backstage was about surrender. This is actually not about the four of us. This is about them. God, do what you need to do in this room. And so give up the piece that's like, I gotta be perfect and it's about me and da-da-da-da-da, and just surrender and walk out and let God use you in the way that God is supposed to use you.
Thank you, I appreciate that a lot.
Thank you, yo. All right. Please, hey, Vine, keep it Vine.
Okay, so my name is Ashley Amber. I'm a content marketing coach, and storytelling is one of the ways that I really like, you know, push my clients to, you know, push the envelope with their brands. And I guess my question is there a line? So with myself, I feel like I'm pretty out there. Like, I'll be telling my people everything. Like, hey, listen, this was just happening. But with my brands that I work with, they're more on national levels and some of them even on global levels. So it's like they can't be as out there as I am with my brand. So where do you say the line stops? Would it be, you know, with the personal story? With the brand story, should we hold back a bit? Like, where does the line start?
I mean, I think you hit it. I think, at least for me, and I'm sure DeTavio and Vanessa have something to say to this, but like the line stops when you go outside of your brand voice. So you have to know your brand. You have to know exactly what the brand stands for, what the beliefs are. If you don't know what you believe as a brand, you got to start over, okay? Because the belief system is going to drive all the communication. And it's also going to resonate. It's going to connect. It's going to take an emotional toll on, I mean, it's going to connect emotionally for people. And so, yeah, definitely don't speak in your personal voice when you're representing a brand. And DeTavio gave me this example last week. We were talking about a toothpaste brand. He was like, you know, toothpaste brand should not be talking about how they change the world. It's just not realistic. Right? You don't stretch yourself too far. Pull it back. Think about what you do in your authentic, true self, and what's the real story and voice that you want to deliver that in.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
You draw the line. You determine it.
That's my response. That's the line is where you put it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My line is way further than a lot of people's, and I'm okay with that. I show up as myself.
Good afternoon. Vanessa, there's actually a book that aligns with what you said about passion versus skill. If anyone wants to read it, it's called So Good They Can't Ignore You, Why Skills Trump Passion. But I actually have a question for Josh. So you mentioned that The Shade Room is the largest, I actually wrote it down, the largest, most impactful social media brand to date. But I actually have The Shade Room blocked because I feel like it is inherently toxic and negative. But I do know that there's value in engaging with the largest, most impactful platform. So if we're using DeTavio's line of the fact that social media is the stories that we tell ourselves, how do you feel that The Shade Room is, one, sharing positive, affirming stories to the Black culture, and two, how should we as small businesses be engaging with that, knowing that it's multifaceted, we'll say?
No, I think that's well said. I think it's well said. We're truly in that maturation phase. So by no means are we perfect, but what we do is a lot for small businesses. We created the e-commerce platform for them just because we saw an outcry of businesses that didn't have the platform to grow. We have our charitable giving, which is far above 10% every month that people don't talk about, nobody hears about, nobody sees. We create long form content from an editorial and from a journalistic integrity standpoint. In TSR Investigates, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, they've all been on Stepping Into the Shade Room, one of our key shows. So there's a lot that we do that isn't toxic. I understand what you're saying. Social media can be a gift and a curse. All those things that I mentioned to you about the opportunity that it presents for businesses can also be what can go drastically wrong. I don't put too much stock in and critique and criticism, because as a leader and as a trailblazer, there was no roadmap. There's no playbook for us, for my CEO to build this company, right? What you will see is a lot of evolution moving forward as we continue to grow, as we invest in ourselves. But the first job of a Black brand, of a Shade Room, is to survive.
right? We have to make sure we have a tomorrow in order to change tomorrow. And so look for more change. I don't think I answered the question. I think I made it into the...
No, all good, because can I jump in?
Yeah, yeah.
You got something? Ladies first, you got it.
Yeah, I was gonna say yes to the progressive movement forward or expansion into, more positive stories. But I mean, let's be honest with one another. We all family here, right? I like a little bit of toxicity. I like a little bit of negativity sometimes. I like the Housewives franchise, Bad Girls Club. Come on, let's be honest. You know what I'm saying? We're all up here promoting positivity and forward movement. And yes to that. But I mean, shit, we all like a little ratchetry sometimes. Come on, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, that's real.
Yeah, and so that was going to be my point, which is... we can all hold the Shade Room accountable, but then we also must hold ourselves accountable.
Period.
Because in this game of media, you vote with your eyeballs. Where your eyeballs go, that's what gets made, right? So when you see things popping on the Shade Room, it's because y'all chose that. When you see things popping on Zeus, it's because y'all chose that. If you want him to be able to do more positive, optimistic, uplifting work, then y'all choose that. Go find the post that he's posting of small Black businesses and like it up and share it.
Preach.
So it's got the same exact stuff that Blueface and Krishan has. We are in control of what they're making. They're just speaking to the demand. Y'all are in control of all of that. You know what I mean? And my frustration is because, look, we've got great shows, Drink Champs, Carisha Please, etc. I can get people sitting in Drink Champs for 3 hours, 2 million, watches, views after the first 24 hours. But then let me put Michelle Obama, Kelly Rowland, Tina Knowles. Nobody shows up they show up for the ratchet. So if y'all want us to fix it, stop showing up for the ratchet, start showing up for the good, or what I believe is balance. They're also balanced. So we're going to do Drink Champs and Carisha, and we also going to do Michelle Obama.
Yes.
They're doing the Shade Room, but they also are doing the same room, right? So see the whole story, see the Black media companies trying to do the balance, and then y'all vote for your eyeballs, because I promise you, we will follow where your eyeballs go.
Yes.
Glory. Glory. All right. We're very limited on time.
I'm going to keep it very, very short.
Yes.
My name is Joe Love. I just want to thank you guys. You're God's blessing and a message, and I love it. Thank you.
Bless you. Bless you,
yes,
sister.
Yes.
We're going to make it through these next two. We can do both.
Hi, I'm Deion Harris of Young Entrepreneurships of Color. And I was wondering, where did y'all, hone your skills, in the real world or, in school, our program? Because I'm trying to hone my skills as well.
What type of skills are you trying to hone?
I work with interviewing and drama, basically. Trying to get the truth out there.
Trying to get the truth out there.
Okay.
That's what we need. We need more of it, brother. We need more of it.
Reps, 10,000 hours. How many hours you got? You been alive for 10,000 hours?
Bye.
10,000 hours, brother. And don't beat yourself up along the way. Don't curse yourself out along the way. Do 20 interviews next week. Get those reps. You're going to mess up on at least half. Just go. By the time you get to 5,000 hours, you're going to feel a little swag coming. By the time you get to 10, you're going to be in your bag. You know what I mean? Just keep going, brother. It's all good.
Thank you.
That's clean.
Good luck.
All right.
Hello. My name is Julian Cavanaugh. I am a proud HBCU student of Simmons College of Kentucky.
All right.
And I'm also a poet. And my question is, recently I post all my work on Instagram, but recently my Instagram got deleted. So how do I jump back from that?
There's definitely a real problem with censorship by these tech platforms. Let me just be clear. I don't have an answer for you with that censorship yet, but we need to be vocal as a community about how that censorship is not okay. They took the Shade Room down for over 3 months, stopped our revenue streams for a meme that was modeling rats swimming in water after a flood in New York. They said New York City residents right now, right? That was the meme that we posted. And it was they blocked us for 3 months. That's people's jobs that got lost. That's a page that's struggling to survive at that point, right? So anyway, I do think that there's a real problem there. I don't know that there's a solution yet, but where there's your voice, there's another outlet. So spill, threads, you know, we're not going to go back to vines anymore, but you know, revolt, you can always find a platform, man. If you got a strong voice, then it'll be heard.
So my 30 seconds is, you don't need us to tell you how, because you know how, you already did it. So what you need someone to tell you is go do it again. Yeah. And again, and every time they stop you, do it again and again. And if they stop you, do it again and again and again. If it is on your heart, don't let them stop you. You keep pushing, you keep going, you will find your way. You already know how. Go do work. Go do your work, King. You got it.
Rebuild.
Send me that poem, by the way.
Thank you, I will.
All right. I would love for you, before we close, to speak about Black Tech Weekly.
Well, all right.
Let's go.
Everyone loves Black Tech Week so much because it's amazing that we have developed a media outlet called Black Tech Weekly. And what is unique and amazing about Black Tech Weekly is that we have formed partnerships with majority media outlets like NBC and Inc. Magazine. And we will be amplifying the stories of Black founders, Black creatives, and let me just real quick. So to be in tech, right? None of us code anything, right? Being in tech means being in marketing, being a writer, a creator, a designer, in sales. That's all being in tech. So Black Tech Weekly is gonna tell the stories of all of us, and they will be amplified on these platforms that have like hundreds of millions of viewers. And what is amazing actually about this partnership for Black Tech Weekly is all of the content is going to be approved by Black creators. It will be posted, cross-posted on all platforms. So we're talking about the same content posted on NBC, posted on Inc. Magazine, posted on our black media outlet partners' platforms as well. So Black Tech Weekly is popping off right here after Black Tech Week. We've gotten it all together. I'm talking to DeTavio, we're gonna pull something together. But no, Black Tech Weekly is gonna be great. Look out for it. We sent out a press release for it last week, and yeah, we're gonna have a newsletter, and everybody here, we have your emails, so you'll get it too.
Round of applause, yeah. I love that. I can't wait.
Before you close, can I say one thing?
Yeah.
Where's the young brother that just asked that last question? Just raise your hand. I don't need you to come up. I just need to see where you are. Okay, my word for you is the fire in your belly has to be greater than the water they're going to use to try to extinguish it. You make sure that that happens and you'll be good. Okay.
Wow. 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 So please, before we get off the stage, do you feel like this was valuable? You felt like it was valuable? All right, make sure you go on the Black Tech Week app and let them know, all right? Leave a good review. And also, if you felt like we provided value to you, I want to know how can the audience provide value to you? So can you go down, whether it's your social media or how can we help you? You can take out your phones. Most likely, you'll say something about social media.
My very easy one is Revolt. Everything Revolt. Revolt podcast. Revolt on cable. Revolt app. Download the app. Watch our shows. Vote with your eyeballs and share. You can follow me at DeTavio on everything if you're interested. I care more about Revolt, though.
Yeah, I mean, grace for the shade room of the past. And and dig in. We really do a lot of thinking and intentional thought about what we put out every day and how we serve our community, which is oftentimes breaking news and news that that needs to be told but doesn't make us any money. TSR Investigates is one of those examples. So continue to support the Shade Room. We will figure it out, right? But as the largest and most influential social media platform, and it's owned by a Black woman. Give it your time, give it your energy. At Josh Ott, or at Ott Josh, is my handle.
Good.
Give your feedback on our panel today to my good teammates. Look out for Black Tech Weekly and come back for Black Tech Week 2024.
That's right. And And for me, as I was introduced, I am the founder of Barbershop Speaks. We engage in intelligent discussions inside barbershops and beauty salons. We've been doing that for the past 7 years before LeBron. I love LeBron, though. He's the GOAT. But we've been doing it for a minute. So please follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Well, I don't really use Twitter like that. But follow us on Instagram at Barbershop Speaks. We will deeply appreciate it. Thank you all so much for your time.
God bless you all.
Thank you, guys.
That's a wrap on our storytelling deep dive. And a reminder that your voice isn't just part of the work. It is the work. Huge shout out to Vanessa, DeTavio, Josh, and Jefferson for keeping it honest and dropping serious game. If this one lit a fire, subscribe to Road to Black Tech Week, leave a review, and send it to someone who's learning to lead with their story. And don't just listen, pull up to Black Tech Week 2025, where visionaries get loud, July 14th to the 16th in Cincinnati. Visit blacktechweek.com, and until next time, own your story, trust your voice, and stay building.